I'm Henry St. John from the US Rate Strategy Team, and you're listening to At Any Rate, our global research podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and industries and markets today. I'm joined today by Head of US Interest Rate Derivative Strategy, Josh Younger, to talk about the upcoming Big Bang transition to SOFR discounting cleared swaps. We'll be going through some of the mechanics of this transition a little later in some more detail. But before that, this week brings the first glimpse of the size and magnitude of the portfolio of residual risk to be auctioned among the mandatory participants on the LCH side. So Josh, what are we expecting this week? And what is it going to signal to us about how the transition will proceed as a whole?
Yeah, thanks, Henry. So first, I think it's important to keep in mind how essential this process is to benchmark reform in general. So one of the goals of this exercise is to create a large pool of assets which need to be dynamically hedged with long-dated OTC derivatives. And that's intended to generate not just a large balance of these derivatives in the market, but to generate a lot of trading activity. And transitioning discounting from Fed funds linked to SOFR linked curves is one way to generate a lot of this kind of activity, because dealers and others who manage their discounting risk actively need necessarily to rebalance their hedges with a high level of frequency. Just every time rates move, the present value of the stock of positions changes, which changes the profile of discounting risk and requires that kind of rebalancing. So this is a way to jumpstart the OTC market in SOFR derivatives, which has an essential role in facilitating the rest of benchmark reform, because ultimately we need a derivative market to facilitate the transition of the cash and loan market. And so these two things have to start somewhere, and derivatives is one way to do that. So Friday is the announcement by LCH of an estimated direction and magnitude of residual risk to place with end users. And there's a quick review. The Big Bang process has a cash adjustment, which is mandatory. So the impact of the switch in discounting factor is offset with credits and debits to margin accounts. And then there's this option to receive basis swaps, which for those who have discounting hedges will automatically convert those or make it easy to convert those from Fed funds linked discounting hedges to SOFR linked discounting hedges. So this is meant to avoid having to rebalance an entire book to a new index, but the clearinghouses are giving the market, at least non-members, a chance to opt out of that process because not everyone wants these hedges. And so everyone who opts out needs to find a counterparty who's willing to accept delivery of these basis swaps, because ultimately it is a zero-sum game. And both CME and LCH are conducting auctions to place that risk with end users who actually want it. LCH is making a public disclosure of an estimated magnitude and direction for their auction. That's on Friday. That is only LCH. CME is not doing that. And so we'll get a glimpse of what the population of opt-out participants in the market looks like. And it gives you a sense of what the hurdles will be, or how high the hurdle will be to clear that auction ultimately when it occurs in mid-October. So this is a very important announcement. It gives a sense of how potentially disruptive or easy the process will be. And so having a sense of what it's likely to look like is important, and the potential for this announcement to move markets, at least in basis, and so for Fed funds basis, is a very important thing to keep in mind. So the first question is, what does the opt-out population look like? We've written about this in the past. It's going to be dominated by very in-the-money receive fixed positions. That's where most of the discounting risk in the market comes from. And that's because the receive fixed side of the market tends to be an issuance hedger or a liability hedger more generally. That's insurance and bank issuers. So in both cases, there's an accounting incentive in others to keep the coupons matched, or at least keep the coupons unchanged relative to when the trade was initiated. These are receive fixed positions. They were typically done years ago. Rates are obviously lower than they were years ago. So there's a lot of positive unrealized present value associated with them. And especially in the case of insurance, they're very long dated. So there's quite a bit of discounting risk in duration terms associated with these trades. We've made some attempt to estimate the magnitude of that using statutory disclosure. That's line item disclosure for insurance derivative portfolios. Requires a lot of cleaning and assumptions, but at the end of the day, we get a number like $50 to $60 million a basis point in discounting risk associated with those insurance positions. And banks are comparable in size. Banks, for the most part, will be mandatory receivers of basis swaps, so they cannot opt out. But it is discounting risk that they would rather not deal with. So it's going to get put into the market either way. But specifically for the auctions, the insurance companies, one thing to keep in mind in addition to their scale is that they are very highly concentrated on the CME. So we estimate somewhere between 80 and 90% and more and longer maturities of that discounting risk is actually CME discounting risk. So on Friday, when the LCH announces their ladder, it's likely not to reflect the vast majority of that insurance liability hedging activity. So that means it will be much smaller. At least the positive present value associated with those types of trades is much smaller on LCH than it is on CME. Another thing to keep in mind is that the pay-fix side of the market, preferentially asset managers and REITs, used to be majority on CME. That's why CME fixed rates tended to be higher than those on LCH, the cross-CCP basis that emerged in 2015. But since then, that cross-CCP basis, the CME-LCH basis, has compressed to the point where it was almost flat for most of this year. That suggests that those pay-fix positions have migrated to LCH, where the fixed rates were lower. It was a very reasonable thing to do. And what that means is the offsetting positions to insurance flows, specifically pay-fixed exposures among asset managers and REITs, asset swappers in general, probably at least a sizable fraction of those have migrated to LCH. So that means the offsetting positions are, again, concentrated on LCH. And so if you have less received fixed and more pay-fixed, it suggests that the actual risk to clear the market in the LCH auction is likely to be significantly lesser than CME. So one thing to keep in mind for Friday is that we may get a number that's a bit underwhelming relative to market expectations, but the smaller the magnitude of risk to get placed that's announced on Friday, the larger the magnitude of risk to be placed with CME in mid-October. And as Henry will go through, there are some differences in the way those auctions are being conducted, which suggests that the risk of a failure in the soft or hard form, as we've described it, for CME, because of the mechanics of that auction process, as well as the larger magnitude of risk to be placed, the risk of a failure is higher there than it is on LCH. The more general observation is that any auction failure or very off-market clearing level for these auctions has the potential to generate a lot of volatility in the pricing of OTC SOFR derivatives. And if that's sufficiently disruptive as to inhibit trading activity in those products, we could be in a situation where the rest of benchmark reform becomes significantly more difficult to achieve. So this is a very important process. It's a very key event in the benchmark reform journey. And Friday is the first step in that key catalyst. So with that in mind, another aspect of this, which is very important, is the actual mechanics of the auctions themselves and the differences between what LCH is planning versus CME. So for that, I'll turn to Henry to walk through some of those key elements.
Thanks, Josh. So yeah, I think it's helpful, firstly, just to step through the timelines of the respective clearinghouse proposals. So on the CME side, the opt-out by the participants that are able to opt out is due by October 2nd, so still a couple of weeks left to go. And from there, basically, a SOFR curve is built as of the close on October 16th, based on the sort of market levels that are observed in the interdealer market. Cash transfer occurs based off those levels, and then swap compensation is added in for basically everyone. And then there's the opt-out auction occurs subsequent to that on October 19th. So there's a sort of transitional delay between the cash transfer and the auction actually occurring. Now, on the LCH side, the deadline to opt out was September 4th. So that's been and gone. And as you were just outlining, there the deadline for sort of providing the indicative portfolio is September 18th. So that's this Friday. From there, on October 16th, there's actually what's referred to as a mid-setting auction. And the basic idea there is that the mandatory participants, being the dealers, have to provide two-way prices for all the maturity buckets that are up for auction as part of the overall process. So that's 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20, and 30-year tenors. And they have to provide two-way prices. If any two dealers were to cross prices up to a certain volume, which is, you know, specified and known to dealers at the time, but is not made public, then that would effectively cause a trade to occur. And the idea being that there's sort of skin in the game here, so that that mid-setting price auction actually kind of converges on something sort of resembling a true market spread. So that mid-setting auction occurs on October 16th in the morning. Then the cash compensation occurs based on that curve that's been constructed. And then finally, still on October 16th, the auction occurs sometime in the sort of the New York morning in a sequential basis. So starting with the shortest tenor and moving through to the longest maturity. So yeah, that's the sort of broad overview of the two processes. And then secondly, you know, we've been getting a lot of sort of frequently asked questions on the mechanics of this process. So, you know, the first one, which I've kind of alluded to a little bit, is where exactly does the SOFR curve come from that's generating this cash compensation mechanism? And so on the CME side, it's based on the interdealer broker market. So it looks at those marks for benchmark tenors, the tenors that I named earlier. And then for the shorter maturities, it's marking off the CME futures. So it's using those as the benchmark points, interpolating between those to sort of construct a curve that'll be ready and available as of October 16th. On the LCH side, the mid-setting auction is what's used, as I was just describing, for the benchmark tenors. And then inside of those levels, again, it turns to the futures market to kind of construct that curve. And so, you know, it is worth noting here that while those auctions are occurring, the cash compensation at least is occurring at roughly the same time. They're based on what are effectively slightly different curves because of that. So, you know, the second question is, say I'm an insurance company or an asset manager and I choose to opt out, do I care about the auction outcome? And the answer there is you still, you know, very much are interested in the outcome of the auction, because in effect, the forced participants in the auction are compensated for intermediating that basis risk that's being recycled back to the market. And the idea there is that there's actually a sort of transfer that occurs based on where the auction clears and where the mid-setting price was, which, assuming that the auction clears above the mid-setting price, is effectively a transfer equal to that spread times the DVO1 of that particular benchmark tenor times the amount of discounting risk that client had actually provided in the auction. So say, for example, you know, this is a particularly large company with 10% of the discounting risk at a particular tenor, then they are transferring 10% of the cost of processing that auction. So, you know, the idea is that there's still some interest in the actual, you know, outcome of this auction. And likewise, if the auction price were to occur inside of the mid price, the transfer would occur in the opposite direction from the dealer to the opt-out participant. So another question that's come up quite a lot is, what kind of auction is it? And the idea is that bidders basically can bid for the tenors in two different ways. They can either bid for a slice of a particular portfolio. So say the two-year portfolio, they can bid for 10% of that, 20% of that at different price levels, or they can make a single bid for the entire slice of that portfolio. And the idea is that all winners pay the same price if it's allotted to more than one participant. And so effectively, the clearing price will be determined by the final price that clears the market, the final 100th percentile that takes that slice of the portfolio. So another question is, can the auction fail? So we've defined two different forms of failure for the auction mechanism. One is a soft fail and the other is a hard fail. A soft fail effectively is when the max loss threshold is breached. So this is a threshold that's set by the respective clearinghouse. And it means that if the auction clearing price is too high relative to the mid price above that threshold, then they can only clear a certain volume up until you hit that threshold. And after that, they won't process any more of the auction. And the idea there is to protect the opt-out participants so that the transfer doesn't get too significant, that it actually becomes quite punitive for them. The other form of failure, a hard fail, is basically if we just don't reach the sufficient number of bids to actually clear the portfolio. Now, LCH requires a minimum bid for the portfolio of 10% for a mandatory participant. And since the number of participants exceeds 10, that means that hard fail really isn't possible on the LCH side. However, on the CME side, there is no mandatory volume of bid, and that means that a hard fail is very much a possibility on that side. And again, it means that if that's the case, then it's not possible to deliver any clients of basis swaps, and they could find themselves, the sort of opt-out participants do end up getting delivered with those basis swaps, and potentially in a position where they'd look to recycle those subsequent to the auction, just in the regular market. So thanks for joining us. And institutional investor clients can check out our research on these topics in more detail on JP Morgan Markets. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2020, JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on September 15th, 2020.